ran down the hall to get here. I was just sharing with Miss Baker that 1 o'clock comes fast if you happen to go out of the building for lunch to get back in the building by 1. This is Monday, February 10th, and we are having an information meeting on Senate Bill 555. And I see who's going to start us off this afternoon. Campbell is going to be ours. Craig? Craig is the chair of the State Commission on Children and Families. And with Craig is Donald Middleton. Who is the director? You're looking very bright and sunny. Did you bring all the sunshine today?
Senator Winters, I wish I had. I wish I could take credit for it, but I can't. But I will if you'd like. Senator Winters, members of the committee, my name is Donna Middleton, and I'm the director of the State Commission on Children and Families. I'm just up here to introduce Mr. Craig Campbell, who is the current chair of the State Commission on Children and Families, and he is going to present you with some history of the Senate Bill 555 legislation and progress. Also, I'd just like to draw your attention to the agenda. We have a number of folks coming, a number of partners, as well as three counties coming to present to you today. And so how we would like to do it is as soon as Craig has completed his comments, and then folks will just begin to come up. So, and then they can introduce themselves if that's all right with the committee.
That is fine. That's good.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Craig Campbell, and as was just mentioned, I'm the chair of the State Commission on Children and Families. I'm going to keep my comments fairly brief, but what I'm going to do is give you a brief overview of the development of the comprehensive planning aspect of the Commission on Children and Families and its Senate Bill 555 partners, and then I'm going to give you a brief overview of those things that we have seen coming out of the most recent, which is the first comprehensive plan that we've accomplished with all of those Senate Bill 555 partners. When the commission was originally created as a result of a planning team called the Children's Care Team, at that point in time, there were a number of local plans that were being done by various state and local agencies that in a sort of a silo, they were planning for their own resources and how those resources would be used to address the needs of children and families in those communities. There really was not a good integration of those programs. There was not interagency communication about how those monies were spent, what programs were supported by each of them, and even coordinating the same caseload where you may have several agencies, state and local, who are addressing the needs of a family and did not realize that each other had that family on a mutual caseload. So when the commission was created, one of its tasks was to develop a comprehensive planning process, but a more important step occurred during the Senate Bill 555 process in 1999, in which the state decided to bring together some key state agencies and make them responsible jointly for a comprehensive planning process, where the Commission on Children and Families facilitates that comprehensive planning process at the local level. It really is not a Commission on Children and Families plan. It's a comprehensive community plan. And what they do is they bring community partners, agency folks, members of the citizenry of each of those local communities. And after doing assessment of the needs of those communities, they then identify what resources they have available and essentially match them up in the planning process. And it's done in a joint fashion so that there is not the problem of disconnect between different folks providing programs. They can see clearly who is sharing in the responsibility of addressing each population in each program area. We just completed what is called phase two of the comprehensive planning process. Phase one was the phase where we did a risk assessment. Phase two is where they took that risk assessment and then strategized how they were going to address the needs of the community and identifying specifically what those needs were. What I'd like to provide for you now, and the folks in the room who are going to be testifying after me will be filling in with much more detail, the three things that we asked those comprehensive plans to address. You'll see up on the screen, the first is to address a juvenile crime benchmark. The second is the eighth grade alcohol, tobacco, and drug use level. And then third, for them to choose an early childhood high-level outcome amongst the many that the commission has available to it. Each community was asked to identify one that really met the needs of their community and then to go about trying to address that one. There were three major priorities that came out of those comprehensive plans that the Commission has identified and drawn out, and I'll present those to you now. The first is collaboration and service integration. Essentially what that says is this comprehensive planning process is working. Because we're coordinating with each other, we're seeing efficiencies, and it's giving us an opportunity to have all of our partners at the table. So the Commission is going to talk to you an awful lot about maintaining the importance of those integrations of services and working together to do planning. The second, of course, is cultural competency and gender-specific services, because oftentimes those specific services are left out of the general discussion unless somebody is constantly looking at those and making sure they're being addressed. And then finally, a prevention approach in addition to intervention and remediation. Now that we're facing a situation where you're seeing it sometimes drastically reduced resources through state budgeting, oftentimes it's easier to address only those areas where you're dealing with a high-risk situation where you need to address it immediately. The prevention end is a critical element because it's the only way in the long term to solve the solution, bring the likelihood that you're going to have those back-end high-risk issues occurring. In specific, the prevention approach covers a couple of areas. One is parenting education. A number of problems could very likely be resolved by making sure that parents who want to have those services actually have adequate parenting support available to them. Second is making sure that the early childhood years are positive and supportive ones, access to early prenatal care, making sure that those who are pregnant are free from drug abuse, alcohol, and tobacco, which, of course, significantly increases the chances of those children being born with a variety of learning disabilities, birth defects, etc. Making sure that there is a health aspect of immunization and wellness to make sure that as the child grows that they don't come to face medical problems, which are very preventable. Family literacy, of course, is critical for the development of the child's mind, making sure that they have access to books and so reading materials early on in their life, even if it's just exposure. High-quality and hard-to-find child care options, such as sick care, children with disabilities, parents who work outside of the traditional 9-to-5 Monday through Friday work schedule. And then finally, preschool and other educational opportunities early on to make sure that when a child does get into school that they're ready to learn. And then finally, positive youth development. We focus an awful lot on either the early childhood element, making sure that that is in place, and then, of course, when a child gets into the system somehow, whether it be through child welfare or through juvenile correction sort of settings, the commission is responsible for overseeing the system that supports prenatal through age 18. That means that once a child has a good start, we want to make sure that there's a positive element going through with that child so that they can develop normally and don't fall afoul and enter the system, thus imposing an additional cost to the state. That's going to end my comments at this point in time unless I get a nudge from my director that I left something out, which occasionally happens, actually often happens, and I'm willing to answer any questions that you may have.
You must have done a very good job.
That was easy. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. I think we're going to have early childhood at this point, right, Anita?
Part of that, yes. Good afternoon, Chair Winters and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Anita McClanahan, Director of Early Childhood Education Programs at the Oregon Department of Education. My part of this presentation...
We have with you Diana Allen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you
want
to introduce
it? No. Just wanted to recognize you.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. Chair Winters, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Diana Allen, and I'm Director of the Early Intervention, Early Childhood Special Education, and Regional Programs for the Department of Education.
Thank you. We're very pleased to be here as part of the team that's going to give information regarding the work that has occurred in the state and throughout this last biennium connected to Senate Bill 555 and House Bill 3659. As Craig mentioned, the Senate Bill 555 is about the comprehensive planning piece. House Bill 3659 was an outcome of the last legislative session and relates to a system of supports for early childhood programs across the state. As we did our work this biennium, we recognized that there is great need for connection and interconnection between these two pieces of statutory legislation, and we have been consistently working together to ensure that this happens. Research definitely supports that a comprehensive and coordinated systems approach to services and supports for children and families is the most efficient and effective way to do our business. As Craig mentioned, every local county has developed their local comprehensive coordinated plan as a part of our investment for at-risk children and their families in our state. Building on this, the Legislative Assembly enacting the Children's Plan, or House Bill 3659, represents a continuation of this statewide effort to both integrate and ensure that across the state we have coordinated comprehensive services for children and families 0 to 8. There are three key policy elements to the Oregon Children's Plan. Those elements are components of a statewide early childhood systems approach that supports services in for children and families. Another element is that it defines how we coordinate both statewide and locally, and it defines the responsibility that we have to carry out this coordination. A third component is that the law requires that we look at existing services and that we build on what is existing to maximize what we can provide for our families in every community across the state. It's important to relate to you and report that all of our counties completed their Phase 2 plan within the scope of the requirement in Senate Bill 555. It's also important to report that all 36 counties developed strategies that address issues that specifically impact young children and their families, or issues related to early childhood. That is an outcome of their Phase 2 planning. The Phase 2 planning process also involved, across all counties, early childhood teams, which were comprehensive. All of the important partners that reflect the work that children and families need for their special supports were in the early childhood teams throughout our county. The county plans indicated that they have found strategies, or they want to approach strategies, that reduce child abuse, that develop comprehensive early child care programs. Child care is a major issue throughout the state and one that our local counties are seeking assistance with and looking within their own communities for ways to address the issues of child care. Another identified element in the local plans was that they want to strengthen early intervention services and implement Healthy Start home visitation programs across the state, as well as coordinate at a higher level all of the existing programs that impact the lives of children and families. Their local communities are coordinating with the preschool services provided in Head Start Oregon Pre-Kindergarten. They're coordinating with local preschool providers for those next steps for children. They're coordinating with Even Start, which is a federally funded family literacy program. So we find a variety of ways across the state that local communities are working to implement social services, that they're working to implement supports in a systemic way and in a consolidated, coordinated way that best impacts the children and the families. I would remind us also that all of this is voluntary, that families that participate in these programs do so upon a voluntary basis, a very important element that our legislative body has wished that we build upon that issue of voluntary. No one is mandated to participate in the programs. An important role that the state has had is to look at what are the outcomes that we want to address as we look at developing this system of comprehensive and coordinated services. I'm certainly not going to read to you all of the outcomes listed on the blue sheet that you have in your packet, but what I want to identify is that the first list of outcomes, the high-level outcomes, are those outcomes that are addressed in the Oregon benchmarking process. And we are committed as partners across the state, as partners in our state agencies, to address collectively these outcomes. The shared intermediate outcomes are also outcomes that we as state partners agree to address, as well as support for our local partners in meeting and addressing the outcomes identified. The last part that I want to present to you is the research piece. And what we tried to do for you is highlight some of the most current and the most valuable research available that supports what the state is trying to do in terms of comprehensive coordinated planning and in terms of delivery systems. One that I specifically want to highlight because I have some recent interaction with this report is the first on the list, inequality at the starting gate. All of the supports that we're doing for young children and their families is in preparation for the child's better outcomes as they enter the larger public school system. This report, Inequality at the Starting Gate, has been published by the Economic Policy Institute, which is a nonprofit organization that looks at critical national policies, reviews them, and then gives guidance for us as policymakers in terms of what we might need to do to change the conditions of children. This particular report accounts for the fact that children's inability to be successful in school is not so much about being a minority, but more about being disadvantaged. That the issue of poverty has the highest result in children not being successful as they move through the school system, as they move throughout their life. It's a very, very critical report that has just been issued in the last 2 months and one that you might want to pay attention to. There are also policy guidelines there for us as policymakers. I believe any report that you looked at here would be supportive of the work that we're doing. We tried to make it easy for you by giving you, in most cases, an easy access through the internet, and perhaps some of your aides would be able to assist you in finding information related to the work that we're doing. My colleague Diana is going to talk about our coordination and both at the state level and at the local level. Thank you.
Chair Winters, members of the committee, I'd like to provide some examples of how the early childhood system development of House Bill 3659 supports the ongoing work of Senate Bill 555. I participate on the Early Childhood State Team, and this is a team of state agency representatives from the Oregon Commission on Children and Families, Department of Education, Department of Human Services, Employment Department, Child Care Division, Oregon Youth Authority, and the Department of Corrections. We come together monthly, and we meet to talk about coordinating policy development, planning, and implementation for the Oregon Children's Plan, which encompasses the work of House Bill 3659, and the ongoing work of Senate Bill 555. We meet monthly, and we work with our local partners in coordinating training and technical assistance in many areas, especially in the area of early and universal screening, which is voluntary for families. An example of our collaboration, in September 2002, state partners jointly sponsored and administered a conference, the Oregon Summit, Children's Emotional Health and At Risk. This conference is a great example how in phase one plans of the early childhood system development, area of children's mental health was identified as an area of need, and state partners came together collaborated and put on this very successful statewide conference. The conference represented, we had participants, speakers from out of state, and each county was represented with an early childhood team at this conference. We have active early childhood teams in every county, and 26 of the counties act as an advisory group to multiple partners, and some of those examples are Healthy Start, Early Interventions Local Advisory Councils, and the Oregon Head Start Pre-Kindergarten Programs. And I guess what I really want to emphasize is that all the state partners are working with our local partners to reinforce the message of coordination and collaboration at both the state and local level. Thank you.
Question, Madam Chair.
Ms. Clinton. Representative Smith.
Thank you. This question can go for either of you. How are you measuring your outcomes? I mean, have you been able to reduce adult substance abuse or domestic violence? And do you have any quantifiable data to support what you're trying to do here?
Senator Winters and Representative Smith, the outcomes that are identified are outcomes for which that we currently collect data on, and I cannot give you the specific data related to those outcomes, but they currently do exist as data collected items. And different organizations are specifically responsible for identifying the resources. I think that perhaps someone from the Department of Human Services would be able to answer that. It's not data that we specifically collect at the department. But on the high-level outcomes, they're identified as existing outcomes for which we have current resource data.
Follow up.
Thank you. Well, these are problems that are certainly not new to society. I would think that would be a readily accessible information to them. And if I think we need to really look hard at some of those programs and to see if they are successful. I would be very disheartening to me if they came forward and said, well, we have increased alcoholism, increased domestic violence, knowing that we are in a recessionary time where people have lost their jobs and those type of behaviors have increased. I would like to know how you're kind of working on that problem to keep it at a minimum.
Representative Smith, the outcomes that are on the blue sheet that
I
you have,
uh-huh.
when we start talking to the some of the budget issues with the agencies, they will then address those particular high-level outcomes. Then they will bring to us what's happened in the decreased rate of child abuse and neglect, you know, and so on and so forth. So all of them will be addressed as we go through the process. And
thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee.
And since Representative Smith mentioned alcohol and drug prevention, hi, Barbara.
Hi.
How are you?
Thank you.
Barbara Smaglio from the Department of Human Services.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Barbara Smaglio, Community Prevention Programs Manager from the Office of Mental Health and Addiction Services in the Department of Human Services. And I want to talk with you this afternoon a little bit about why alcohol and drug prevention in particular is a crucial element of Senate Bill 555 and the comprehensive plan and how it relates to the other components of what you've been hearing about. There is a goldenrod colored sheet in there that corresponds to my comments, but I'll be summarizing. First of all, why do we need to include drug and alcohol services in a comprehensive plan? I think most of you are probably well aware of why we need to. But just to summarize, in our 1999 household survey of adults in Oregon, over 15% of adults either abused or depended upon drugs or alcohol in that survey. And nearly half of 11th graders in our 2000 youth survey in the schools in Oregon used alcohol or other drugs in the last 30 days. We know from research that alcohol and drug abuse is a major risk factor for negative life outcomes, including criminal activity, child abuse, and many others. So in order to develop a comprehensive approach in our communities, alcohol and drug prevention is an essential component that must be included if we hope to be successful. By way of background, some of you remember the Social Service Investment Work Group process and the reports that came out of Governor Kitzhaber's administration that focused on many areas of social supports. One of those areas was highlighted in a plan called the Oregon Alcohol and Drug Treatment System Improvement Plan, and there were funds associated with that to improve the treatment and prevention system in the state. This was really a corresponding point to the Senate Bill 555 process, where the improved planning would go along with additional resources. And the Senate Bill 555 legislation directed the Governor's Council on Alcohol and Drug Abuse to develop a comprehensive plan that would be part of the overall Senate Bill 555 plan. So the work that we've been doing subsequently follows on that work, which was begun back in 95, 97 and following. What are the outcomes that we're looking at? The particular prevention outcome that we look at is the eighth grade drug use, and that is what we're focusing on in, as you see up on the screen, and it's one of the key outcomes. In our most recent surveys, in the year 2000, we saw that for eighth graders in the last 30 days, 26.4% had reported use of alcohol. In 2002, we saw that take a slight decline to 25.3%, which certainly is still unacceptable, but it was heartening to see some progress. On the other hand, we don't see quite as good of progress on the drug side. In 2000, eighth grade drug use in the last 30 days was reported at 13.8% in our school survey, and in 2002 at 18.3%. Now, this corresponds with what I think we've been reading in the paper, which is a tremendous increase in the use of methamphetamine and marijuana, as particular for young people. It's a horrendous issue, and I think we're seeing the results in the drug statistics in our young people. To try to address that, we specifically focused on an important aspect, which you've heard about before, which is parenting. Our focal point for the last two biennia with our prevention dollars has been parenting education, because we know that parents are the most important influence on children's attitudes about drugs and alcohol. So if we're going to make any long-term progress, we have to start with families. We distributed 32 parenting grants across the state and tribes to counties and tribal entities in the last two biennia. And we also did an evaluation of those parenting grants, in which 80% of the parents reported that they felt the programs helped them improve their skills. They learned how to handle stress better, how to handle their children's problems better at home, and how to discipline more appropriately, which are all correlated by research with improved family management skills. Family management is an important risk factor leading toward alcohol and drug abuse. So we attempt to, through our parenting programs, address the underlying factors related to alcohol and drug use. These are cost-effective programs, and they're also able to give parents real skills in the community that help them cope on a day-to-day basis. These programs can be done in churches, in schools, in businesses, and they're a very important way that we can collaborate with both other governmental partners, school partners, and other partners in the community. The research, as I mentioned, behind this is based on the Hawkins and Catalano model of risk and protective factors. David Hawkins and Rick Catalano from the University of Washington have spent about 30 years looking at the risk factors associated with youth behaviors and problematic youth behaviors. What we find, to summarize briefly, is that most of the high-risk youth behaviors are correlated to the same underlying risk factors in the community, in the peer group, in the family group, in the school, and in the individual themselves. So we are directing our folks through the comprehensive plans and through our granting process and our contracts with the counties to choose evidence-based strategies to target these multiple risk factors, because we know that a young person doesn't just use drugs or alcohol. Very likely they also have some other issues that could go along with that, including criminal justice problems, teen pregnancy, school dropout, or other issues. So we need to be more cohesive and comprehensive in the work that we do. These risk factors are measured in our Oregon Healthy Teens Survey, which we do every year, and this is a survey that is conducted in the Department of Human Services in the Health Department in collaboration with the Office of Mental Health and Addictions, the Department of Education, and it is administered in local schools that are sampled throughout the state. From that survey, we gather information that allows us to report on a lot of those performance measures that Anita McClanahan mentioned and pointed out to you. We also put that information together in a county-by-county data book that is up on the DHS website, so that as counties are doing their planning, they can click and get all this information about how they look in terms of all those risk factors and protective factors, because it is also important to enhance the protective factors that help shield our young people from the risks. So I think what I've been trying to share with you is that everything we do must be coordinated, because none of these problems exist in isolation. And although my particular specialty might be alcohol and drug, that is closely connected with everything else and why we're part of this collaboration. Our implementation plans this year for the counties, which we're working on now, that will guide their funding for next biennium, is part of the comprehensive process that you heard about, the phase two strategies and now the phase three, the implementation plans. And all of those plans had to be reviewed at the local level. They go before the County Board of Commissioners, but they also have to be looked at by the local Commission on Children and Families for their check that, in fact, this has fit in with the comprehensive plan. So this demonstrates that we're serious about this process. Although it has been a long time in developing, we're taking it seriously. We're using it as a tool in planning, and we're trying to eliminate the duplication. We're taking it a step at a time. In summary, I guess I'd say this process has been very complicated. And I know you have a lot of questions, and we've heard your concerns about the complexity of this local planning process. What I would say is we're facing very complex situations in our state. And I think the seriousness and the dedication of the team members that I've worked with has been quite impressive to me. You know, and I think we are trying a step at a time to turn the Titanic and really get everyone working together. We're taking it program by program, but we are seeing the value. And we're seeing the value in people coming together and saying, wow, you know, we have $10,000 from you for this parenting program, and we may have $20,000 from someone else for this other little program. It's a drop in the bucket. But if you let us put it together, we can really turn it into something that helps the community. And that's what we're striving for, so we can leverage those resources to help achieve those outcomes that we also desperately want to see improve. So I thank you for the opportunity to share with you a little bit about what we're doing and the importance of our work, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Barbara, I know we'll probably get into more detail, you know, when we get into the individual budgets, but you had in your report said that the drug incidence among youth is up with the alcohol piece down, and that methamphetamine tends to be the drug of choice among the youth now, that and marijuana. Is that because of cost?
Well, I think what we're seeing, Madam Chair and members of the committee, is that the price for methamphetamine has come way down, and it has spread so quickly that it's hard for law enforcement to keep up with these clandestine labs. So cost is a huge factor, among other factors such as availability, widespread availability, really down to the youth level, which we never saw before. It used to be more limited to the adult population, but now it's rampant in the youth as well.
So our legislation, I think it was last session, or last, that provided for tougher penalties for the manufacturing of methamphetamine either hasn't kicked in yet, or we haven't made it tough enough.
Mm. Well, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think it's a huge problem. I think we are seeing results, but it's going to take a while to see the numbers catch up.
Thanks. Any other questions? Thank you, Carmen. It's Karen Andall. And Phil
Lemon.
Chair Winters and members of the committee, thank you for having us here to talk about the juvenile crime prevention portion.
Karen, you want to state your name for the record?
Yes, I will. Karen Andall, I'm executive assistant to the director of the Oregon Youth Authority, and regrettably, Karen Brizeau, who was scheduled to be here, is ill today and was not able to make it. And Mr. Lemon?
I'm Phil Lemon. I'm the executive director of the State Criminal Justice Commission.
Phil and I would like to take a little bit of time to share with you information on the juvenile crime prevention part of this coordinated comprehensive planning for prevention services in communities. So we're going to tag team this effort for you.
That's the green sheet.
And there is a green sheet, yes. The juvenile crime prevention is just one component of the larger coordinated prevention efforts and system of services to children and families. It involves prevention funds from the Criminal Justice Commission, CJC, and diversion and basic services funds from the Oregon Youth Authority, or OYA. Similar to other parts of the service system, the juvenile crime prevention focuses on services to youth with more than one of the following risk factors. They are school failure, alcohol and drug use, poor family functioning, negative peer association, and antisocial behavior. Services within this are also available to high-risk youth ages 10 to 17 who are clearly demonstrating at-risk behaviors and who are at risk of imminent or increased involvement with the juvenile justice system.
Madam Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity to talk to you today. I want to give you a little bit of background about Senate Bill 555 and structurally how this has organized our work and our involvement. The other thing I would say at the outset is that the presentation of this committee is a little new for us because we are both in the Public Safety Subcommittee of Ways and Means, so our budgets do not come through this group, but the work that we do obviously has an impact on the agencies and services that you deal with in this forum. The Juvenile Crime Prevention Advisory Committee was established by statute to provide policy guidance and direction for these prevention funds. We have about two dozen members on that group, including Senator Clarno and Representative Canope, who are advisory non-voting members of that group. But we have a constituency-based structure that has everyone from juvenile directors to directors of local commissions on children and families to a whole range of service providers and affected agencies, professions, and disciplines. The statute that governs us, again, lists the risk factors and requires that the youth eligible for funding from these programs be clearly demonstrating the at-risk behaviors and either be in the juvenile justice system or at imminent risk of becoming into it. The JCPAC has adopted policies that we're focusing our efforts on children aged 10 through 17, since that is the primary age at which juvenile crime occurs. We do have a flexible policy so that where counties want to address children who are getting into the juvenile justice system at earlier ages, and sometimes those kids are the ones who stay in the system the longest and create the most serious problems, they are able to be addressed through these funding streams as well. We have minimum grants to ensure that some level of prevention services are provided in smaller counties. We have a waiver policy so that the funds, even though they come through different agencies and go some to juvenile departments and some to other entities, are flexible and can be moved across those barriers to best serve the needs of the community. And we've also defined prevention in a way to support that effort. The prevention that these funds pay for, prevention services these funds pay for, is any activity that addresses a risk factor. So it is not limited to whether you are in a under the jurisdiction of the juvenile court for a delinquent act or whether you are not. Yes, as long as the service being provided, whether it's by a juvenile department or some other entity, addresses a risk factor for that youth, then that can be funded through these funds.
In terms of outcomes, within the JCP, counties are required to meet the high-level outcomes of reducing juvenile arrest rates, reducing juvenile recidivism rates, and they're also required to stay within Oregon Youth Authority discretionary bed allocations for each of their counties. Within the plans that the counties develop, they identify the specific outcomes and activities that are targets within those high-level outcomes.
I know you've had a major emphasis on research and what works, and we've tried to make a similar effort with that, and actually Senate Bill 555 codified many of the research practices and the research basis for this program as we walked into it. The risk factors you've heard Karen and Barbara Simoglio describe are in the statute, and those five risk factors deal with school success, substance abuse, family functioning, negative peer association, and antisocial behavior. In order to be eligible to receive services from these funding streams, the child must have at least one, so two or more, of those risk factors. The other research basis for that policy decision is that the risk of involvement in the juvenile justice system increases as those risk factors multiply. In other words, the more risk factors you have, the more likely you are going to commit a crime or an offense that's going to get you into the juvenile justice system. I spent this morning up in the Senate Judiciary Committee listening to Professor Ed Latessa, who is here talking to, and he's up in the House Judiciary Committee right now, talking about what works and effectiveness in correctional programs and practices. And the things that he talks about are the same things that you see here in this process. There are a series of risk factors that, if you address them and address them effectively, can dramatically reduce the likelihood that a person is going to commit a crime, whether that's their first crime or coming back through the system. And actually, with the exception of school failure, which doesn't really apply to adults so much, they are very similar lists between what you see for adults and what you see for children. We use a risk screen, so any time a child is referred for a service, they get a risk screen that establishes whether they have these risk factors, how many they have, and then that guides the local communities in deciding what kind of services are most beneficial to keep this kid out of the juvenile justice system or limiting their entry further into it. We also have research has done a lot of work in certifying some programs as effective. And then also, if we can't identify specific programs, the research has identified certain principles that, when applied, regardless of the program, will help effectively reduce the likelihood that someone's going to commit an offense. The JCPAC has heard from Del Elliott, who is a researcher from Colorado. You may have heard of the Blueprints program. That is kind of the good housekeeping seal of approval for juvenile crime prevention programs. It's gone through the most rigorous scientific evaluation and identified programs that do work, that can be replicated in a variety of settings and have been successfully replicated. And so we do have a few of those that are funded through the juvenile crime prevention programs that we pay for in this
question.
Funding.
Those blue ribbon programs that you say do work, do you have any outcome information to share with this body that determines their rate of success in Oregon?
Senator, we have. I've seen one evaluation on one of the blueprint programs that we funded. The rest will be coming in through our evaluation process, which we will be presenting in our budget committee hearings next month. I'll be glad to share that with you. But you're asking about how the effectiveness of these blueprint programs as applied in Oregon. if I understand your question.
Yes. One of the last session, and whether we're talking about the those programs that are in the Oregon Youth Authority or whether they're in Human Services or whether, you know, wherever they are in government, it is the interest of legislators to know what the outcome on those things that we are purchasing. And if, you know, you said you have certain studies that have been ranked as tried and true and where results are good, I think we would like to know, you know, those and where they are working successfully, because I think we're all interested in successful outcomes.
The one that comes to mind, Senator, is the multi-systemic therapy. It's being conducted in Douglas County. The overall juvenile crime prevention evaluation process is being done by the University of Oregon Institute on Violence and Destructive Behavior. That same group evaluated the MST program in Douglas County. I just got a little while ago an evaluation report about that thick, so I'm afraid I haven't gotten all the way through it yet, but we'll summarize and get you that information when we have it.
And I don't want to make assumptions, but when you say multi-systemic, what's all involved in the multi-systemic program?
Well, you're going to ask me a question where I'm getting a little bit beyond my range, Senator, but basically it takes it's intensive therapy in a family setting that deals with a variety of issues that a child and a family have, whether that's drug abuse or mental problems, a whole series of things. It's very focused. Interventions that is in a very controlled environment. It's that the reason we don't see a lot more of it here in Oregon is it's also quite expensive because it does involve a variety of professions and real intensive look and working with the families. But I'd be glad to get you more information on
that. Thank you. Representative Bates.
Madam Chair, you've hit upon one of the key issues for me in looking at all these budgets, and that's the outcomes of the programs, not just what we're planning to do and we hope to do. And I would ask that when you do have studies of outcomes, that we have an opportunity to see the actual studies, not just the reported results. I'm interested in how that data was obtained, whether it was subjective or objective data. I'm not really interested very much in subjective data. I want objective data on whether or not the program is successful, rates of incarceration, rates of drug use, things of that nature that are hard data we can really look at.
We hope to be able to provide that to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Winters and members of the committee, would like to touch just briefly on the coordination issues. As you've heard, coordination of all these efforts is wildly complex and very important. One example of efforts and benefits achieved to date is that during the 2001-03 biennium, the Criminal Justice Commission and the Oregon Youth Authority combined planning, reporting, and contracting activities for the JCP prevention, basic services, and diversion. This was a long-term effort and fairly complex, but we were able to achieve this. And the result is that counties now produce one plan instead of two for these dollars and for their plans. They enter into one agreement with the state of Oregon versus two agreements with two state agencies. And then the financial and program reporting is reduced through consolidation and streamlined processes. Not to say that we've reached perfection in this effort, but we feel like we've moved forward. It's also important to know that that actual process will now be incorporated into the larger comprehensive and coordinated planning process, so that we're hopeful that all of these agencies, local and state, can come together to identify how counties can produce basically one set of information for the state in this area. So we feel that it's very positive. It's also very important to note that CJC and OA work actively with other partners at the state and local levels. You've heard about some of this through Ms. Simaglio, but it's very important to know that we strive to work with our county partners and have them at the table to help us in this development piece to make and streamline their work, as we're now dealing with definitely limited resources and time.
Senator Carter asked what happened to our pig today, and I told her that we were having an oversight information only. But under in our normal committee presentations, this committee has a fine system for the use of acronyms, and the proceeds of those when we at the end of the session will go to the Oregon Food Bank. So for those of you who will be back in front of us to present your budget, I'm just putting you on alert that bring your half dollars and dollars with you and contribute to the cause of the food bank. That goes for the members on this panel as well. We all are guilty of using the alphabet soup, and so we're going to pay for those usage.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Donna. Chair Winters, members of the committee, I'm again Donna Middleton, Director of the State Commission on Children and Families. I have the privilege of talking to you about what the second phase of the community comprehensive plans have told us. And I'm going to do this rather quickly because why we really wanted to have the state system come and tell you about our coordination and our systems integration efforts. We have three counties with us today, and I want to give them as much time as possible to show you how this coordination looks on the ground, because I think that's really where the rubber meets the road in this particular effort. So I have you look at your white piece of paper, which is the testimony that I have provided. I'm not going to read it, but there is a chart that looks like this, which are the most frequent priorities and strategy areas of the Phase 2 Community Comprehensive Plan. And those include child abuse prevention and services. 34 counties were very concerned about issues around child abuse and prevention and wanted to look at things like family support, community safety nets, issues around foster care were most commonly addressed in that particular piece. Also, as Barb Smoglios pointed out, youth substance abuse prevention and treatment, also very high. 33 counties mentioned in their plans issues around around substance abuse. The other one that's very, very concerning to most folks is, again, juvenile crime prevention. How do we continue to work with children who are at risk and prevent them from coming in to the criminal justice system? And then we also had a number of counties working very hard in collaboration and service integration. One of the things we're seeing in this state is we need to coordinate, we need to collaborate, and we need to pool our resources in order for our communities to have service delivery that they can count on and it's not duplicative. And that's part of the reason we're doing this work. As you can also see, 28 counties mentioned parenting education. Well, what the research tells us that one of the best crime prevention opportunities you have is to work with and educate parents around how to support their families. The Surgeon General said it is the number one crime prevention strategy, helping parents support their children. And then you see other things like families' basic needs. We're talking about wages, housing, those kinds of things. And then, of course, mental health and also positive youth development, working on the strengths, supporting youth in our community and sort of giving them a pat on the back for things they do well. Also to that piece of information is the areas that are still challenges to us. You know, one of the things that we have to talk about is, you know, yes.
I just had a question because it's kind of interesting to me that the family basic needs is 24 counties have it and the others have a higher need. And it's kind of interesting because when family basic needs are taking care of jobs and those, you see the others go down. I mean, it's just we know that where you have jobs and some of those, then the stressors are removed and you don't see so many incidents of child abuse and neglect and some of the other factors. So I was kind of interesting to see that that's down at 28 when I thought it would have been 36.
Senator Winters, I think the thought of basic needs
is permeates throughout all of the counties. I think specifically those particular things were named in particular. I do believe that last session you heard that one of the top priorities for all 36 counties was transportation. Again, a real basic need. So I think it's still in the process, and folks are still paying good attention to it. I want to just go over a little bit of the challenges, because I think, as some have mentioned, this is a process of coordinating a system of supports for children and families. Some folks have asked us why we don't do 0 to 100. Well, as you might see, 0 to 18 is challenging enough for coordination of service delivery. So we've just taken on the 0 to 18 now. Not that it wouldn't be at times good to look at the coordination of services for the adult system. So what we're looking at for challenges are we still need to create, as Representative Smith mentioned, better ways of collecting data so that we can look at the outcomes across systems. We're working on that. We're going to look at a prototype for the early childhood data collection and hopefully run a test on that particular opportunity this month. But we still have a lot of work to do on data collection and those kinds of things. We also have some work to do on expanding our partnerships. While we have excellent partnerships in the community and at the state level, we still need to engage some of our partners at the local level, such as our education community more fully, our workforce investment programs, and mental health and public health also.
Don, I need to ask this because you mentioned one that I know last session both myself and was concerned about the educational piece. And has that improved since last session?
Senator Winters, it has improved greatly. Greatly. We have many more folks at the table, both at the state and local level, from education. And I have to say that Superintendent Castillo has been very supportive of this effort and has said she will engage at any level to support working in coordination.
Good. That's good here. Senator Carter.
Donna, I'm raising some concerns because I know if you look in many communities of color, I think that your priority list would be different. I don't know, so I'm just kind of raising it as an issue for you to maybe ask some questions, especially when you look at the area of mental health services. When you look in my district in particular, you cannot look very strongly without raising the issue of gang activity and mental health and many of the issues that come with complex family systems of parents with drug activity. I'm just wondering, are you looking at this holistically?
Senator Winters, Senator Carter, yes, we are. These were just, there was the 1,800 strategies that were mentioned in the plans. Okay. These are just the highest ones that bubble to the top. They're looking at these as a system of supports. These are just the ones that we identified. There are many, many more. As you can see in the juvenile crime prevention, you would find mental health in that, alcohol and drug, and gang activities in a number of supports. So we just picked out the highlights. If you look at the plans, they are much more mishmashed than how we have described the number of counties and their strategy selections.
And follow-up. Mr. Chair, the reason I raise this as a concern because in Multnomah County, we are taking mental health therapists out of our schools. And yet, when you look at the national level and we talk about health care issues, and gang activity was not just a criminal act, but an act of mental health and those kinds of issues. I just don't see how we can continue to raise the problems that many kids are having without looking at something as serious as this and in terms of mental health. Okay.
Senator Morris.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. The reference to the challenges and reporting of expenditures. Could you elaborate on that?
Excuse me.
Yes. Senator Morris, would you speak up just a little tad bit?
The question had to do with the challenges and reporting of expenditures, if that could be elaborated.
Senator Morris, yes. What we were looking at is looking at how we could coordinate how resources are spent both at the state and local level. We're currently working on a form that would show how all the local resources are spent on certain priorities that the counties have identified so we could see service system coordination and gaps. And so by the time we come around in a year, we will have a coordinated list of expenditures so you see how they all coordinate together and fit together. One of the reasons we're doing that is to look at, are we all funding the same thing? Are we funding best practices? Is there coordination around how we can better fund and support issues and services in communities? So, yes.
Follow-up question. Thank you, Madam Chair. Would that include the not-for-profits as well?
Senator Morris, absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you.
All right, I'm going to try not to take any more time, but I just wanted to show you and refer you to some charts in your packet. I'm not going to read them. These are charts of information about where we are in the process. You can see phase one, phase two, and now we're embarking on phase three. I'll let you look at those at your leisure. We also have in the packet how the state system partnership is structured. Again, please look at those, and if you have any questions, we'd be happy to talk with you further about those. And the last thing is a interagency agreement. This agreement was signed by all the state agencies that you've seen here present. The reason is we do want to do business differently. We are looking at a system of supports both at the state and local level, and we have an interagency agreement that's going to help us get there. And all the state agencies have signed it and said we're moving forward with this collaborative process. And the last thing I'd like to just share with you real quickly before I introduce the community folks is we submitted this community comprehensive planning to the John F. Kennedy Innovations Award Program at Harvard University.
Did we win?
Well, sort of. We did not win that one, but we were contacted by the Better Government Competition and asked to submit our Senate Bill 555 planning to the Effective Public Management System. And this group is called Better Government Competition, and it is a think tank that provides state and local government with ideas to streamline and make more efficient the provision of public service. And we were asked to submit this process to them. And they were strongly urging us to consider their request to enter our Senate Bill 555 planning. And they said, as your proposal shows that coordinated comprehensive plan is on the cutting edge of entrepreneurial ideas of good government.
Yeehaw. Very good. So I expect you're going to submit it. And I expect that we're going to win.
I can't wait, but I think that we are. Without further ado, I really want to introduce
Senator Gordley.
I know that Ms. Middleton is anxious to bring on the panel, and we're all anxious to hear them as well. But I did want to ask about the audit of Oregon's programs for children and families. The evaluation of local coordinated comprehensive planning. It's the document from the Joint Legislative Audit Committee last December 2002. I realize I came in late, so perhaps someone has already talked about the audit. It would be instructive, I think, for all of us if you could speak briefly about the findings and recommendations. And I know that there is some... there is a statement in the audit that talks about the difficulty comparing county plans and some of the difficulty in ensuring that the plans are all meeting the requirements in statute. I don't think I'm overstating what's in the audit. Could you please comment?
Yep, Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, that is correct. There was an audit. A part of Senate Bill 555 is that the Legislative Fiscal Office would do an audit each biennia of this planning process. This is the second audit that we have had completed. And the audit findings were, one, that the planning process was consistent with the Senate Bill 555 legislation, which we were very pleased to hear about. Obviously, we want to make sure that we're in coordination with what has been asked of us. The other thing it talked about was that this is a work in progress, and that that work in progress is taking shape, and that they also talked about the fact that it will require additional supports to make sure that the coordination both at the local level is accomplished and that there's more work to be done. They also talked about the fact that, if there were additional dollars, they recommended it that if there were additional state dollars, which that's probably not going to be the case, that those dollars would go through the state than the local comprehensive plan to fund services. I believe that Sheila Baker has given you a copy of that document, and we are using that document to improve in the areas that we need to improve, but also are using it to say that we're on the right track, and we would like to continue and go forward to the next phase. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, if I could just address the piece that you brought out. As we were looking at the plans, one of the things that we had thought in our budget linear analytical thinking was that we would have a checklist of the statute and go through the plans and say, yes, this is here, yes, this is here, yes, this is here. Because of the way that the instructions were given to the counties, which was to develop some global guidelines and some specificity in terms of outcomes, but allowing a lot of leeway in how the plans were actually packaged, if you will, we weren't able to satisfy our analytical checklist approach, and so we had to use a combination of both looking what was in the written plans and then talking to the people in the four counties that were our focus, talking to those people and observing for ourselves whether those things were happening or had been talked about or were addressed.
That background is very helpful, Madam Chair, and thank you, Sheila.
So I would like to introduce Marlene Putman, who is the director of the Tillamook County Commission on Children and Families, Dana Brooks from Grant County Children and Families, and Carol Ware, who is from Washington County Children and Families. They're not all going to come up at once, but I'll let themselves select, and then they can introduce their partners that are with them today.
Lean into the microphone, I guess. We only have three chairs up here. I'm Marlene Putman. I'm the director for the Tillamook County Commission on Children and Families, and I really appreciate the opportunity to present here today and for you to get a chance to meet with these people that I get to work with.
She's going to bring you a chair up. And so you turn the mic so that our staff can hear you as well.
Okay. Can you hear me better now? I won't do that. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
So I'm really pleased to have a chance to introduce the members of the Commission on Children and Families. All three of these folks here are members on the local commission as well as community partners. And to let you know that this type of a forum where they have to answer questions about how things are working at the local level is also what they hold me accountable for when we have our own meetings. And just for context, one of the things about the planning process that happens at the local level and why there are different plans in each community is because in my community they said, yes, planning is important. Coordination is more important. Action is most important. So we spent time planning, but at the same time we were planning and coordinating, we also are implementing. So you're going to hear a little bit about why planning is important, as well as, so how have we made a difference in our community? So without talking further about that, I'm going to go ahead and introduce folks to you. The furthest over here is Todd Anderson. He's Tillamook County Sheriff. We have Christy Vale. She works for the Employment Department. And John Sandusky with Community Action Resource Enterprises. And I think they're each going to take a few minutes and talk with you. Please feel free to ask questions. You want to go ahead? John, you want to start?
As was just mentioned, I'm the director of a local nonprofit called Community Action Resource Enterprises, and we use our acronym. We call it CARE. And so there's, just in case, you know, I say that more than once for you today. We're a kind of a local anti-poverty social service organization, very much in the tradition of community action programs around the state. And I have to admit that when the Commission on Children and Families, who I had viewed more often than not over the early part of the 90s as a funding mechanism, and we would compete and put our application in every year just like many other local community agencies, when they said, okay, because of this thing, some Senate bill, and I was, of course, very happy to hear about that, said we have to plan. I was very skeptical about that because it seemed like it was going to be 17,000 more meetings that, you know, and then you wonder when you see plans where they're going to go and what's going to happen. And so I was all the time carping at Marlene here and arguing and being disgusted that she had me go to another meeting. But being a good citizen and a cheerful soul, I stepped in and tried to do my part anyway. And what we found out was that through all of the getting the people together around the table in different groups that had to do with certain larger community issues, and then compiling both data that was local, that people themselves working in their own programs brought, as well as some other organizations larger had compiled, and the stories about what kinds of things were going on in different fields, from mental health to juvenile justice to homelessness to hunger to schools and all those things, really did a wonderful job of identifying the kinds of needs that our community had. And we did our best, as any local group can do, to try to prioritize those. And out of that grew our local comprehensive plan. And though I was skeptical, I think what we've wound up with is a really wonderful tool. It's been very useful to not only the commission itself, but to me and my business and to other nonprofits around, to help them make sure that what they're doing is addressing some identified and agreed upon community needs, some things that really need to be addressed. We've done different kinds of things to put Band-Aids on hunger, as a for instance. But when this local community plan in our community really pointed out the need, especially among children, for a lot more work and coordinated effort on that, then among others that got together and tried to figure that out and work on it, my own agency put together what we're calling a food security program, and we've helped enhance the local RCA of Oregon Food Bank and expand the number of places where emergency food's available and the kind of food that's there, and we're still working on getting some people interested in where their food comes from locally and how to produce more of it and how to be able to purchase more of it that's grown locally instead of far away, and in some ways work on some self-sufficiency in our local community. And that's a minor example, really, compared to some of the other things that have been going on. So I think we've had some good things arise out of all that thinking about what the needs were and put them into effect. One of the things that I've been really impressed with, Marlene especially, and her staff at the commission, is that she doesn't let any of us, either on the commission or out there doing our jobs in our own fields here, forget that the plan has things in it that need to be done. And so that big word that comes out, implementation, is very important. And some of the things that we've actually been reminded of, and thus as a commission or by influencing community members and partners to do, have might sound small. Everything in my little county is small in scale, but they've really made a difference. One of the things that we've done is talk about the need for coordinated and well-planned parent education resources. And so we discovered that there were three or four different people who were providing parent education in different places and for different reasons, although frequently talking about the same stuff. And we worked as a commission, and some of us who are involved in the provision of parent training and so forth worked together to try to put together a plan for parent training that made sense community-wide, that could be offered in all parts of our county, and that was taking into account not only the specific requirements that different things, programs and so forth need to make sure they're training parents about, Head Start being an example of that, for instance, but also some of the things that we wanted to try to, through the plan and identified needs, we wanted to try to impress upon the community. And with some extra resources that Marlene was instrumental in getting through some grants that weren't part of the normal Children and Families funding stream, bringing in some new resources and coordinating all that, we've had a much better plan of parent education, from things about child care, about drug and alcohol abuse, about just parenting skills, a variety of those things happening on a regular basis throughout our communities in Tillamook County for the last year. The food security thing that I mentioned is another one. We've also just recently begun trying to coordinate all the different programs that have their staff members inside people's homes for some sort of home visitation thing. We do that to some degree with our child care resource and referral program, and so do other programs, and we're bringing together now all of the home visitors to try to talk about ways that we can be saying the same things to families and addressing some of the joint, broadly identified needs that families have, instead of one program concentrating only on its own thing and acting as though it were in a vacuum and nothing else was happening. I think that those kinds of things have really made a big difference in our community. And I'm impressed that we've been able to do that, and happy that I can be a small part of it, and more impressed with the fact that the commission has really taken its job to heart to try to coordinate and make some meaningful planning efforts that can become action in our community. And so I think it's made a big difference in my community. And one last thing I'd like to say is that on a bigger scale than just Tillamook County, I'm fortunate to be a member of the Oregon Commission for Child Care, and have been for the last couple of years. And one of the ways that the Statewide Commission on Children and Families is still trying to coordinate even at a statewide level was their presence and participation and helping with a major thing that the Commission for Child Care was charged with last session. The legislature said, we need you to do put together a task force and explore ways to finance child care in this state. And so our commission went about doing that, and we made sure, and they wanted to anyway, that the Commission on Children and Families was there at the table every single time. And now the various kinds of ways to implement that are coming out of that task force and the report that all of you will get reasonably soon, I think, involve both the Commission on Children and Families and the child care division and the employment department and a variety of other players at the state level to try to see what we can do then. We learned an awful lot, tried to pick some models that we think are good. One of the big things was identifying quality and trying to come up with an agreed-upon definition for quality child care. And then now through the commissions on children and families, primarily, that's going to be implemented. In our own county, we're one of the ones who has tried to do something with that on a pilot basis. And with Marlene's help, the commission was able to apply successfully for a pilot grant to try to do quality child care measurement in our county. The task force basically said, if you want quality, it has to be subsidized, and that's the way that you improve it. And we looked for a way to do that, and so now we're using a nationwide agreed-upon measurement for quality in child care providers' homes in our county with home visitors and mentors to help them do it, and we're trying to subsidize that with some relatively small payments to help them afford to do things they need to do to change the quality. And all of that, I think, will...
What constitutes quality?
Well, the scale that we're using is what is a quality scale based on the environment that the child care is happening in, that talks about things from the safety end of it, make sure that the environment is as safe as possible with a variety of things. Right on through the interactions that the provider has with the child and so forth. And there are some objective measures that can happen. And basically, what we discovered in that task force was the quality could be measured either on an environmental rating basis like that or on a kind of a key indicators basis. And I think that that's also going to be in the report. But both of them are talking about the environment that the child care happens in. If this, this, and this are present, then it's much more likely to be high quality, safer for the kids, able to promote some of the kinds of values and things that we all want in our children as they grow up and in group settings and so forth. And it's hard to be more specific than that unless you want to ask another question.
Yes. She tells me my prompter over here tells me I need to move on a little bit.
Well, I'll finish by saying thank you very much for listening, and also that I do think that this planning, which I was skeptical of initially, has really turned out to make a big difference in our community. Thank you.
And again, Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Christy Vale. I'm the employment supervisor with the Employment Department in Tillamook. And while to maybe someone on the outside that may seem like an unlikely partner, because except for the child care division, we're not involved in early childhood activities of any kind or any type of preventative programs. But as the chair mentioned earlier, a family can't really focus on emotional and developmental needs of their children if they don't have the income to meet their most basic needs for things like food and shelter. And these children that we're talking about are the future workforce. Businesses are telling us today that many of the people entering their workforce, the younger ones coming in, do not have the social or interpersonal skills needed to be valuable and contributing employees. These are things that and skills that we think of generally as beginning to be learned in the home. And likewise, current employees are going to be unable to perform at maximum productivity if they're worried that while they're at work, their children may be becoming involved in high-risk behaviors. And so that's what drove my interest in becoming involved with the Commission on Children and Families, because of their links, the link between healthy children and families and workforce development. I'm relatively new to the Commission, just a little over a year, so I was not involved in the initial massive planning that went on, I'm very sorry to say. But I would like to share some of my experience working with the Commission and the plan itself and how efficiently I felt that it has worked. The comprehensive plan is really our navigation guide for the work that we do on the Commission. And because it was developed with input from a cross-section of community leaders and partners, it really represents a holistic view of the community. The cross-system linkages that have been developed as a result of the entire planning process has allowed us to use all of our resources much more efficiently. For example, in the area of staff training, when one of the partner organizations sponsors a staff training, all of the other staff from the partner agencies will be invited to that training. This allows us to provide training to our staff that we may not be able to afford on our own. And it also allows, and this is really important, all of the service providers in our area to hear the same message. We're all working off of the same page, as was in the case of the cultural competency training that was, I believe, sponsored by the Commission on Children and Families. Mm-hmm. The partnership is going to help us all as we struggle with the dwindling resources to meet the needs of our growing Hispanic population in Tillamook County. Tillamook has never been very ethnically diverse, so many of us have been challenged to meet the needs of this rapidly growing segment of the population. We're all committed to doing so and meeting those needs. By linking with the leaders of that community, we will be able to funnel our outreach activities directly to the intended population. And finally, the extensive network that's been created as a result of the comprehensive plan helps with the success of community engagement activities, because the network of partners is so diverse and crosses so many agency and program areas and is so far-reaching, we're able to garner tremendous support for projects such as our Undie Sunday and Youth Recognition Day. As leaders in our community, all of us here are called on frequently to lend our time and expertise to a variety of boards, commissions, committees, and councils. The efficiency and the effectiveness of the community-based planning process has made my participation with the Commission on Children and Families extremely rewarding, and that also is due in no small part to the focus and enthusiasm of Marlene and her staff on the Commission.
Thank you, Christy. I'm Todd Anderson, the sheriff from Tillamook, and again, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to be here. I am very impressed with the commission and specifically Marlene in our area. I heard somebody say earlier and talked about the rubber meeting the road, and I sit on many boards and many commissions, and unfortunately, many of them don't do a lot of things. I can't say that about this commission. You know, one thing that as a law enforcement executive that I look at is, you know, what's going to happen with the youth? What about the at-risk youth? And in Tillamook, it's similar but much different from the metropolitan area. Our homeless kids are not the ones in Pioneer Square. They're what we call the couch kids. They're on the Johnson's couch this week, the Smith's couch the following week. And so this organization has helped to track those individuals, those youths. You know, the alcohol and drug issues, the chair spoke earlier of the methamphetamine problem. It's at an epidemic level throughout the state, throughout the West. Marijuana, you know, is huge. All the hallucinogens are coming back in full force. Drug dealer was arrested Saturday night in Hillsborough in Washington County. 5 pounds of marijuana, $375,000 in cash. 2 weeks earlier, $871,000, and those are marijuana dealers. And it's not our marijuana, it's coming from British Columbia. But I've also learned from the commission that if the younger children, if they don't receive a meal, they aren't going to learn in schools. And this commission has recognized that and looked at the challenges of ensuring that the younger children are provided with meals throughout the day. This commission, and through Marlene, has written a grant to start and run a violations court, which we currently do. And this touches what some people would believe to be the most insignificant violations as far as status offenses with juveniles, truancy, tobacco issues, bicycle helmets. And what we have in our community because of the commission is accountability for all of these issues. Every juvenile, every child that is cited into juvenile court doesn't just get a letter telling their parents that you know, their behavior was unacceptable. They go to violations court. After they have aversion therapy for the kids who are arrested for tobacco. They have evaluations for the alcohol and drug issues, the minor ones that would go through this court. And then truancy. You know, many of us ignore truancy, but you know, the very minor offenses are symptomatic of something more to come. And this organization has helped front load the prevention by identifying these youths and then by actually tracking them and ensuring that, you know, if they need an alcohol or drug evaluation, they get that evaluation. If they need mental health counseling, they get mental health counseling. They've also developed and supported a program for suspended and expelled youth. Kids were, towards the end of the week, they were acting out in schools, knowing that their behavior would get them an extended weekend. We have a program now, which the commission has supported through a grant, which identifies, targets these youths. They don't get to skip school. They go to a different place than the typical student would be, but they go to a place where they continue to do their studies, and so they're not out there on the streets. As we all know, and as unfortunately we're probably going to see with many of the schools shortening the school years, we're going to see an absolute increase in juvenile crime. And if we can keep the kids that are at risk right now in a position where we can mentor and guide them, we're going to see a reduced crime. I just want to say that I've been enlightened by the commission, and I think it's a wonderful thing.
Thank you.
I wish that the commission, and I'll open it up for questions because I see all the hands raising, would do something to look into, because we talk about all of the problems and what's happening, no after-school programs and some of the other issues. And I sit here and I remember my youth, and I think we've taken away from young people some of the abilities that those of us whose hair are gray, or if it's not, it's because we've gone to the beauty shop, but where we had opportunities that this generation does not have. And I'm thinking that we had the ability to earn money, we had the ability to do work, we had the ability to keep busy. You know, we're trying to find ways, when we look at all the problems of our society, of what we're doing with these with young people, and we've taken away those abilities. You know, I if you happen to be a person who has their own business like I've had, I was able to let my children be a part of that. So they were able to stay busy with their hands and their minds so that, you know, mother could keep up with them. But I say this because a part of, I think, your work that you're doing, I would like someone to begin to look at some opportunities that we can provide for young people. Not everything that we should be doing should be reacting because we haven't provided something for these young people to do. You know, drugs is permeating our society. I just firmly think that when I'm not valued or I don't have the same opportunities and the abilities that some of us chronologically advantaged people had, that's how do we provide systems so that these young people can have some of those advantages and those opportunities that some of us sitting on this panel have enjoyed. And with that, you hand for raise down here, Senator Gordley.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the panel. Sheriff, it sounds like in your comments you stated that in your community, if a young person needs alcohol and drug counseling, they get it. If they need mental health treatment, they get that as well. It almost sounded like treatment is available on demand, but is that what you meant to
convey? That's exactly what I meant. And much of that is through the commission. The commission works directly with Tillamook Family Counseling to provide these services for the youth, and it's a walk-in clinic. We often refer people from the commission, you know, as partners to the Tillamook Family Counseling for evaluation and treatment.
Follow-up, Madam Chair. In the aftermath, then, of Measure 28, Sheriff, will that still be the reality, treatment available on demand?
Well, I know they've laid off people, so I know that that the services are going to be more difficult to get to, but I do believe that the youth will have a priority.
I just wanted to mention that some of the reasons why the services are provided is there aren't necessarily more resources. We've agreed in our partner meetings that this is a priority. And so if that children won't wait more than 14 days before they get an assessment, that they'll be in by 10 days, or that they will shoot for a earlier period of time to get the child in. Also, the local private therapists that provide services have agreed to provide services when the public mental health cannot provide those, so that the children don't have to wait. We use funds from juvenile crime prevention funds to, if they meet with that child welfare criteria, can they backfill? We have an OJJDP grant. Does that one fill in? Do you have some money over here to make sure that those kids can get in? So I just wanted to kind of show
just
how.
Just putting in another dollar. Yep. Thank you.
Oh, that probably required one or two.
I appreciate the response. Thank
Senator Morris and then Senator Shields.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My comments are not in any way to denigrate the work that all you folks do. It's wonderful. But I have a conviction to make a statement and then ask a question of the sheriff. I think we've lost our way. We are treating symptoms and we are not treating root causes. And this issue of drugs and its impact on our children, our families, the unborn, in so many ways, we do not have enough money to treat the symptoms. What are we going to do to treat the root cause? And what I've learned in the district from which I come is that this methamphetamine problem is, as you mentioned, it's out of control. And what do we do to treat the root cause of this problem? Because until we address it, we will just squander billions and billions of dollars in so many ways. So I ask that question. I know it's not one that we can answer today, Madam Chair.
And it's not an easy question.
You can get back and talk to him because it's one that we can debate this all day today. So if it's okay, you and he can.
That's perfectly fine, but I just felt compelled to comment and reflecting on the amount of great effort that we put in to deal with symptoms, and we're not addressing the root cause. And I just... It bothers me a great deal.
I kind of often talk about this gray hair, you know, the things that we... I heard one comment talking about the environment, and I thought there was a time, you know, if you were, everybody that you knew was in poverty, so you really didn't know any difference. And therefore, if you didn't know any difference, you know, you didn't have... There weren't these other kinds of assumptions. The same was true. Those of us on this panel, probably every last one of us, worked somehow in growing up. Mm-hmm. You know, we all either picked beans in the harvest, babysat, did other things to earn our own money, you know, and I think most of us earned our own school clothes and those kinds of things in our environment. Our society has changed dramatically since the years when we grew up. You know, we don't have the same kind of, and I call them opportunities. We had the opportunity to learn and grow. We had the opportunity to learn what it was like to make contributions. Most of us had the opportunity to have both members of our mother and our fathers. We did not have the drug issue was not as pervasive in our communities when I think most of us grew up. In fact, if it was around, we all went around and we whispered about it. It was there when you hid behind the door to smoke a cigarette and hope to God that your parents didn't find out about it. I mean, so it's so different now, you know. But I do think that somehow we've got to grapple with this because it is getting worse. It isn't getting better, and that's why the one who was here from the Employment Service representative, I was very pleased. Because I know when families where you have the ability to earn your income and you have the ability to feel good about yourself, some of these things that we're talking about kind of go away because I can take care of my own. Senator Shields.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to ask you a question that's similar to one that's been asked of me by at least a half a dozen senators. And that is, you've got a wonderfully integrated, and I really mean this, I'm complimenting you, a wonderfully integrated approach. How have you integrated the faith community, broadly defined, into that approach?
You want to answer that, John?
I can say something about it. During the planning initially, the faith community was solicited great length to try to get representatives from a variety of different denominations. In our community, we have a countywide ministerial association that at least a number of the churches have representation at, and another group similar to that that calls itself Tillamook Ecumenical Community. And so we did have several clergy persons involved in the planning in different interest groups, and we have had at times, at least in the last couple of years, different faith communities actually applying for commission funds for one program or another that has come out of the plan and the implementation. And I think that as we continue to focus on new issues that we haven't completely finished the plan for, because it's an ongoing process, those people are still being solicited, and Marlene might want to say something about that to fill in any blanks I've left.
Well, one project that we did start on was a family mentoring project. And the same kind of questions that you raised, Senator Moore, around we need to get to some of those root issues, and some of those root issues have to do with the fact that the families are different. and the children aren't necessarily adjusting well to some of those differences. And so some of the common ground we had was family support, helping prevent that isolation, bringing in some additional resources that weren't necessarily dollars from a state budget or a local budget. So we're working on trying to develop some partnerships in the different churches where they would have mentor families, not necessarily to go out and witness to them, but to go out and talk about budgeting. Some basic things about how do you make connections in your community. We have a number of families that move in or people that have a mental illness, some things that have tended to isolate them. So we don't have any dollars for that right now, but we have basically a commitment on the part of our partners in the faith community and other folks in the community to bring those resources together.
And just a concrete example of a couple things that have happened when we talked about hunger in general in our community and the planning, and some of the church representatives were involved in that. Two different churches have gone back to their congregations now and have started evening meal programs, soup kitchens or whatever you want to call them, where nothing like that existed before. And so now 5 out of the 7 nights a week there's a meal served for poor people someplace in central Tillamook. And another example is that one of the churches has also tried to figure out ways that it can use its resources in the community to help meet specific needs. Churches do that by donation and so forth a lot, but this one has really tried to step that up and almost become a grantor itself for some of the nonprofits around because they've heard about that. And final example would be another church that heard talking about homeless single males. My own agency has a homeless shelter for families with children, but we're not doing single males in that particular location. And so there hasn't been any emergency shelter for some years for that population. And this church is, within this last year, because of hearing about the needs at commission-related events, decided to go and open that up on their own property. And so now there's another service available. So I think it's a really interesting coordination of things.
We're running close to time, and I know Representative Bates has a question, and I've asked that the remaining item on the agenda that we take it up tomorrow. So, Representative Bates.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I do not want to answer this question right now. This is for other members of the audience who will be hearing from later. A lot of the work you do, I believe, is probably to Medicaid-eligible children and young adults. And we are concerned that there may be match money that you're not being able to access because it's not being brought back to the state and brought back to you. And I'd like to have an accounting of the money you receive and the source you receive it from so we can look at that for possible federal match money to expand your programs. It's a concern we have for the entire state, not just your county. And if you could bring that information to us at a later time, I'd sure appreciate it. Thank you.
And we're going to hear from Grant in Washington County now, and then we will save the other item on the agenda until tomorrow.
Thank you for your time.
You're welcome.
You want the money to stay there?
Yes.
Okay.
We're hoping that that honesty prevails.
Okay.
Besides, Senator Carter's watching it very closely. Marcus, you check behind the camera, see where a pig is.
Ready?
Ready.
Good afternoon. My name is Dana Brooks. I am the director of the Grant County Commission on Children and Families, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to talk. I kept staring at the clock thinking, guys, I hope we have time because we came a long way to talk to you folks today. So we appreciate you staying a little bit late to hear our presentation. As you know, we're here to talk about the Senate Bill 555 planning process and how it worked for our county. And I've brought some other partners with me to the table, but we were told we had 10 minutes, so hopefully we're going to be pretty doggone quick in this. So if I get talking too fast, slow me down. So I wanted to start just by saying that the planning, I think, in my opinion, the planning process was fairly easy or easier for a small county than it would be in a medium and large county. And the reason I say that is because most of the people I needed to bring to the table for the planning process, I had meetings with them probably earlier that same day on something else. It seems like that a lot of the meetings you're seeing the same people over and over. So we know who does what in our county. primarily because all the services are located in one town. That's just the fact. So I wanted to say I didn't want to give you the impression, though, that it was easy by any means. I mean, this is the plan for Grant County. It's pretty thick for a small county, you know, to hit all of them. And I wanted to personally assure you there's blood, sweat, and tears in this plan all the way around, a lot of them mine. So we put many hours, many rewrites, many meetings, and more partners than I can begin to count in this plan. But after having said that, I'm going to say that we have a plan that we're extremely proud of and that we can use within our county and that we are using within our county. Community partners were initially very reluctant to come to the table to join us. The fact of the matter is the commission is the one that was given the charter to do this, and the commission is the one that was given the funds to do it. So sometimes convincing the other partners that they had a reason to be at the table and that there was going to be something in that planning process for them initially was a hard sell. But they did come to the table, and they did participate, and it was a lot easier once we identified priorities and then started putting strategies in place to identify or, you know, to address those priorities. They started getting more excited with the process because they could actually see what was in this planning process for them or for their organizations or for their communities. This plan, as you know, had to be not only accepted by our community and our community partners, but also by our local board.
Could you identify yourself for the record, and could each one of the panel, I thought you did, but you
did
pick it up.
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Dana Brooks, and I'm director of the Commission on Children and Families. Do you want us all to identify
then
now?
The next person who speaks, identify yourself.
Right, correct.
And she
Thank you.
Pick it up.
We figure we've spent about double the money that we were given to do the plan. That's how much it cost the local commission to put it together. Was about we were given $17,000 in Grant County to complete the plan, and we spent approximately $30,000 on this plan to date.
So Donna owes you.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for pointing that out, Chair Winters. That's a true statement. But we have used this plan already to leverage outside grant opportunities, the information that we had in there. One of them that we're most proud of is we got one from the Oregon Community Foundation to start an early literacy media campaign that's going on right now within our county, just around the importance of reading early, reading often to your child. And this little one in the ultrasound here is the one that you're hearing in the background right now. So it is a local ad campaign here. So I wanted to also say that the plan has been used at several meetings that I've been to already. There was one meeting even as early as last summer that I went to that Department of Human Services put on. Some people from Salem came over to our county, and they wanted to do a little forum around what they called the tween years, you know, the in-between. They're not the early age, but they're not out there in the juvenile system yet.
It's awkward.
Yes, very awkward. But, you know, I went to the meeting, and the first morning, or, you know, first half of the morning was talking about some of the issues, and then we took a break, and we came back, and I was so, they called our attention to the back of the room, and on the flip chart in the back of the room, they had information that they had gleaned out of Grant County's comprehensive plan up on the backboard, back wall, to use as a starting point for the discussion for the rest of the meeting. And at that point, I can honestly say that I felt like a proud parent watching your child take its first shaky steps, because I could actually see the plan being used in action as the way that we intended it for it to be used, and for the reasons that we intended it to be used. So I do think it's very, very important. I just wanted to finish by saying my part anyway, that the fact that no other agency in the state has ever been responsible for producing this comprehensive of a community plan, and the work that was done on this plan is not duplicate work or work that was already being performed by any state, local, or government agency, and that Grant County, even in our facing budget shrinkage that we're all facing right now, is very committed to this plan and to moving our strategies forward to help our community. So with that, I'll entertain any questions before I turn it over to the next speaker.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Carrie Ann Woomer, and I'm the Grant County Alcohol, Tobacco, and Other Drug Prevention Program Coordinator. That's based out of mental health, and I'm also a member of the Commission on Children and Families. And I've been involved with the planning process since the very beginning. So I can say with sureness that when we were told that we were going to be doing this planning process, that we groaned just a little bit. Well, okay, more than just a little bit, but
We knew that it was something that we needed to do and that we needed to do it well. We were a little concerned that it was another planning process. We already have a lot of plans that are sitting on our shelves at, in our offices, and how are we going to make this one different, and how are we going to use it in our community? Well, as we like to do in Grant County, some of you have been there, I know, we like to do things differently. So what we did was we took this head on. We went out to every community. We spoke with everyone we could. We met with our seniors. We went with our city councils, our school boards. And for those of you that have been to our county, you know it's fairly large. And so we logged a lot of miles. And we talked to as many folks as we could because we wanted their input. We put together all the information that we could, took it out and said, does this seem reasonable to you? Is this what you're seeing in your community? Is this what you're facing as part of the problems or some of the not everything's a problem. You know, we do have some things we can celebrate. But is this, does the information that we have, does that actually represent what's going on? They told us what they thought, what they felt in their hearts, what they wanted to see for their communities. We put all of that information into our plan and created a lot of really good partnerships out of that. We have people now in our farthest community, which is Monument, that can call up Dana or myself or anybody else that was involved in the process, and they can tell us what they need and how they need it and how it can work in their community. So we've gotten some really good buy-in from community members and communities that we really didn't have a lot of input in before. They actually know who we are now, too. So we've created those partnerships and relationships. And when you live in a small county, as we do, and even smaller communities, you have to have those partnerships and the relationships, or else you're really not going to get anywhere. Part of what this did was we got to see that everybody has an input, and when they do, it makes it their plan. So when we go to different venues or we have different issues that we have to present our plans or present what we need to do for that community, they have a buy-in now. So they are actually the ones in our communities that are standing up for Senate Bill 555 plans, our commission plan, our community plans. They have that buy-in, and they are the ones that are saying, oh, I can do it now. So we actually have more volunteers than we ever have had before because they're the ones that want to make it work for them and their communities, and they know that it makes a difference when we're all putting money together. And a lot of what they learned was that we have different resources, and even though we've gone to those communities before and said, this is who I am and this is what I do and this is the money that I may have that can support a project that you're doing, by going out, being a collective group, putting it together, putting it on paper, now they know even more so who we are, and the resources that we pull together makes a difference in their community. One of the benefits that the partnerships created out of this planning process enabled us to create the Early Childhood Committee. And that community, that team encompasses mental health, the media, the medical community, civic groups, schools, and our various agencies. We've launched our early literacy campaign, and we also act as our Healthy Start Steering Committee. Senate Bill 555 really helped promote partnerships and engage citizens that would normally not be involved in this type of planning process. And because they have been a part of the plan, they promote and defend what we do today. We appreciate you coming, or having us come, as we've come so long, so far, to be here and to hear what we've done. We're pretty proud of the accomplishments that we've had so far, and we plan on having many more. And this is a fabulous foundation for continuing that work.
Well, we appreciate your coming such a long distance to share with us what you're doing in Grant County.
Thank you.
Chair Winters, committee, my name is Linda Harrington, and I am the Executive Director of Families First of Grant County. It is a private nonprofit corporation whose primary function is to provide parenting education, information, resource, and referral services. Our goal is to reduce child abuse and neglect in Grant County. And Families First receives funding from many sources, one of which is the Commission on Children and Families, through which we operate our Healthy Start program in Grant County. We also receive money from the state to operate the community safety net program. And we recently received additional money from the community safety net program for a family empowerment mentoring program, which I hope will address some of the concerns about how we address core issues or root causes of some of the social issues that our children and families face. And that is a real movement within our community to do things to strengthen families, because we feel that that's where the breakdown has come. And I am not on the commission board in Grant County. We are a community partner. We use this plan like the Bible. I told, when Dana talked to me about coming, I said, you know, I use that plan every day, because we use it to address another concern that was raised by this committee earlier, and that is, how do we leverage funds? Every single private foundation that I apply for grant money wants to know, what are the strengths in your community and what are the needs in your community, and how is this money going to address those needs? And this plan allows me to put together information that is cohesive, that it's based on fact, that it has statistical information, and that I can draw comparisons with the rest of the state. So for me, it's absolutely imperative that this plan exist and that it be continued, that we continue to use this type of planning document. I want to give you a couple of examples of how we have used it within the community. And one that came to mind was one of the issues in Grant County is a very high percentage of eighth graders that report using drugs or alcohol in the previous 30 days or whenever they do that survey. And out of that information came a community-wide effort to really attempt to reduce the use of drugs and alcohol in the community. And we formed a community alcohol and drug task force. All of us that came from Grant County today have attended those meetings along with many other people. There were oftentimes 40 or 50 people from our community in those meetings that lasted for 2 to 3 hours in the middle of the workday. That is a lot of people in Grant County, let me tell you. And we have worked very hard to identify where the problems are and why our county comprehensive plan showed such a horrifying statistic to all of us. And the number one priority for that whole community group that came out of identifying the problem in this plan and then getting a task force together was that our priority needs to be high-risk kids, and that's where we're going with our implementation phase of the work that we're doing in our A&D task force. Another one, just last week, in fact, a group of us got together from a variety of different organizations to talk about how we could backfill budget cuts in our various programs and what we could do about learning how to access other funding sources. And we decided that we would really communicate around our comprehensive plan. And so we left and we all read the plan, and then we came back together a week later and said, okay, now, how do your needs fit within the needs of this county comprehensive plan? And what are the funding needs that we have in each of our organizations, and where can we partner to apply for grants and funding that will meet the needs of more than one of the goals and objectives in the plan and also help us meet the needs of more than one community-based organization in Grant County? And so we've actually formed a group, and we're going forward with that. From my perspective, it's a living document in Grant County. It's of inestimable value. It's important to know that locally invested dollars aid in leveraging other funds from private funding sources, from foundations and community safety net. Now, we're reapplying for our money from them. It's a very small amount of money. But they want to know, how does it fit your Grant County comprehensive plan? and they want us to develop a work plan around that, and they want to know what the measurements are and what the outcomes are, and it all comes right out of that plan. So we're encouraging you to continue with this process and keep the money flowing through the commission, which is a real motivator in our community.
Thank you.
Thank you. I believe Washington County is...
We have two more for Grant County.
Yeah, two more from Grant County.
Yeah.
Oh, you had a large contingency.
Right, half the county.
That's great.
Nearly half the county. Senator Winters, committee, and Senator Gordley, it's good to see you again. It's nice to know that I'm speaking to some folks that have been in Grant County, so I don't have to give a lot of geographical details. I wish that Representative Smith were here. We're happy to be here. I am the superintendent of schools in John Day, the Grant Schools in John Day, and we have a lot of needs like the rest of the state, but sometimes our needs are drastically different. One of the needs that we have is to be able to...
Could you give your name?
Newell Cleaver, superintendent of schools in Grant County.
She doesn't get to record your name accurately, so when you give your name... Speak up in the mic so that it can be heard back here in the back. Thank you.
And
if I may, Madam Chair,
yes.
I did a lot of growing up and I'll relay all your remarks personally, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Representative Westland.
And I will make sure that Senator Ferriola knows.
And anyone else on the panel that I've overlooked in that behalf.
So is the obvious need for programs, isn't it?
The part that I was asked to talk about today is some of the successes that we've realized through the comprehensive plan and the commission as far as the school is concerned. And I appreciated Senator Morris's comment earlier about one of the issues we're concerned with is that we're not always treating the problem, but we're treating the person before the problem occurs, that we're getting to those kids early in life. And we have an experience in Grant County where, had we not been involved with the commission, myself being on the board and my principal here on the board, we would have probably not been aware that the Head Start program was moved from John Day to Prairie City, which is some piece down the road, and the schools were basically unaware of this except for the fact that we were serving on the commission board. And one of the problems, as you know, in Grant County is being able to get the children to the services because of the vastness of the community. So having become aware of that issue and that the Head Start program had been moved, we realized that that was not going to be in the best interest of our children there and that we were going to try and move it back to John Day. One of the things that has happened in our community, like other communities, we've had to close some of our school buildings down as a result of declining enrollment, and this created a really nice opportunity for us to move the Head Start program back to John Day, where it's centrally located, and be able to provide more services to more kids in a more economic manner. My principal Mark Burrows and myself attended some meetings with the Umatilla Morrow Head Start board, and we made our case to them, asked them if they would consider moving it back if we provided the space, and lo and behold, that's taken place. And so next year we'll be able to move that program back, and we're also guaranteed that the spots that it will not leave Prairie City high and dry, but there will still be some slots there that they can provide those services for the children there. So that's a success story that we come to share with you, and my hat's off to all of those who are involved in development of the Commission on Children and Families Plan, and the comprehensive plan is one that I haven't always been a believer that those plans really work, because I've seen an awful lot of time invested in them, and I've seen a lot of paperwork and a lot of dust gathering on the shelves, but I believe in our case we've actually got a plan that's working. And one of the keys, as I said earlier, is that the schools are involved with the board, that they know what's going on with the commission, and that they're aware of the opportunities to take full advantage of whatever resources are available and complement the programs that the schools are offering. So with that, I want to thank you again, and are there any questions?
Well, I want to thank you for coming such a distance to share with us. It isn't always we get to hear from individuals in the smaller counties, and I think sometimes we don't recognize that there are some different needs in the county when you talked about Head Start than what we see here in the valley, and so it's nice to have you to connect those dots for us, and I certainly appreciate it that you've come an awful long distance. I was just sharing with Sheila that it's a normal policy, and I know that they're having an information flow that we normally have those who are coming from a long distance for you to speak first. But since the agenda was set so that we made sure that it flowed in sequence, you found yourself at the end of the presentation. But I can assure you, when you come back to visit me again, you will be at the top of the list.
Thank you, Senator Winters. Thank you, panel. Appreciate it.
Madam Chair, I move that we appropriate funding based on the county representation present in the room today.
they're applauding. This is an information hearing, and I'm not in work session.
Oh, well, I'll hold that thought.
Go ahead.
Madam Chairman, committee members, my name is Mark Burrows. I'm on the board of the Grant County Commission. I'm also a principal at Humboldt Elementary School, which with 350 youngsters is the largest school in Grant County. And I am pleased and I am proud to let you folks know that for the second straight year in a row, Humboldt has been rated an exceptional school. We get these... Yeah, thank you. This exceptional rating, as you probably know, is based primarily on the excellent academic results we get from our kids. For instance, this last year, 100% of my third graders passed the reading test. Now, I have to credit that to planning, caring, and just plain hard work on the part of my staff, excellent parental and community support. But also, I must mention our plan and the fact that increasingly 5- and 6-year-olds are entering my school ready to learn. And you might ask, why is this true in a community that has been in economic decline for 10 years, where our unemployment has hovered at near 20%, where routinely the free and reduced lunch count in my school is over 50%, why are kids coming to school ready to learn? Part of it, I think, is Head Start that Mr. Cleaver talked about, but I also would credit preschools. Our commission has established preschools in each of our communities, and we've done this with modest amounts of money. I'm talking at the maximum, $10,000 per biennium to establish these preschools in each community. This meager amount of money is leveraged in the community by volunteers and also by the school districts that provide in-kind service of materials, rooms, utilities. Keeping this in mind, you know, all the good that we've done, it's truly discouraging that in a case where we've taken this modest amount of money, and I'm talking about a budget line of $58,000, and that's for a biennium again to establish all these preschools, that has done so much good for kids and garnered so much positive results, that we're looking at proposed 60% cuts, cuts that are so deep that they threaten the program functioning at all. I guess in parting, I would say, as I'm sure all of you know, the economy in rural eastern Oregon is predominantly resource-based. And unfortunately, we don't have well-paying jobs to offer our kids when they graduate from high school. We have few economic opportunities to pass along. The one thing that we can offer them, the one thing we must offer them, is a good education, which is the key to a productive life for these children. And I think the key, or a key, perhaps the key, for some of these poor youngsters is a great start. So I know this panel has a lot of hard decisions. The whole legislature has a lot of hard decisions to look at in this depressed economy. But I'd ask you to reflect on the value of this commission budget for preschools and ask where else has such a meager pot of money garnered so much public support and done so darn much good for kids. Thank you.
As your chair of this committee, you have a strong supporter in preschool. I think that in individuals who followed the committees last year and the year before, one of my things I would remind everyone that we should be talking not K through 12, mm-hmm. but we should be talking pre through 16. So this is one who shares your commitment that of the value of preschool.
Thank you,
and
Senator Winters.
I really appreciate your test, and I'll talk to you a little bit later.
Okay.
Madam Chair?
Senator Gordy.
Thank you very much. I would just like to add my welcome to all of the good folks from Grant County. And as you all have been speaking, it has served as a reminder to me of how important it is for legislators to get out to other areas of the state and find out what's important in other areas of the state. And I find that I listen with a different ear, having been to your communities and met many of you and heard the stories. I also want to say, while you're in the building today, please don't leave without stopping up in S302. That's the Gordley office. We're going to roll out the red carpet for the folks from Grant County. So get prepared, staff, Denise and Sean, if you're listening.
Again, thank you.
Thank you.
And Washington County, are they still here? Yes, they are. Welcome.
Thank you. Chair Winters, members of the committee, I'm Carol Weyer, Director of the Commission on Children and Families in Washington County. Thank you for having us here. Our county is quite different from the counties that you've heard about today. Sometimes I look with envy at the directors in the smaller counties and wish that we could get everybody at the table at one time. So this process is quite different and hard and very powerful, even in a large county. And Katie Riley, our chair of the commission, will share more about that with you, and Janice Ash from our juvenile department. Senator Moore spoke about root causes, and I would propose to you that the commission system and the SB 555 planning is based on root causes. It is the place in our state where we do look at root causes more than any other system, and because we look systemically, we look holistically. The other thing I want to tell you is that I represent the Coalition of Local Commissions on the Senate Bill 555 State Committee. I, along with other local representatives from groups, have the opportunity to work as a team member with state agencies. I don't know that there's any other system in our state where that happens in a very real way, where I have as much of a voice at the table as Donna, as the director of the State Commission, or Becky Eklund. So this is a very powerful and new system in our state, and I'm very proud to be a part of it. Katie Riley, our chair of the Washington County Commission, will continue and tell you about Washington County's plan.
Chair Winters and members of the committee, I'm Catherine, or Katie Riley, as I'm known, and I'm very happy today, and thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of the citizens and children of Washington County. And what I would like to do is tell you a little bit about the impact of the planning for SB 555 on our county. And even though we may be a more urban county, we still have a lot of the characteristics of rural counties as well. And so this mix presents quite a challenge to us in planning. We have five cities that we coordinate with and many different people. So it for us, it was quite a complex challenge to start doing planning that was coordinated and comprehensive. However, we were encouraged by the fact that SB 555 gave us a mandate also to and a tool to work with in which we could pull different people together. And I want to talk about three areas today that we feel are important outcomes of that effort. And one is that our greatest accomplishment was the relationships that we built. We probably had over 200 people participating in our planning efforts. We talked about what the needs were. We got input from people at all different levels, including marginalized youth, people from the Latino community, from other ethnic communities in our diverse county. And we all listened to each other. We listened with our hearts as well to see what they had to say and what the implications were. And we focused then on what strategies were most important. In the priorities that Donna outlined, there was a ranking of some which got mentioned more than others. Even though we may have had some of the same problems as many other counties, we focused more on strategies. And so some of those items, such as child abuse or some of the basic needs, we may have considered, but not necessarily have ranked them as high, because what we were trying to figure out is how we could link different groups together to try to attack those problems and really make a difference. In the relations we built, these have implications and are used by us today and are still very important to us, and we will continue to be so. They are being used as we are faced with the economic downturn and having to look at cuts in the funding that we have for services. And we are trying to use those in creative ways as well. In the written testimony that was provided, I talked about how we had been aware of the elimination of flexible child welfare funds for foster children. And one of our business owners in the community has stepped up to the plate to provide services for sports equipment, shoes, to help out in different needs for those foster children. We have also been working with our Interreligious Action Network and ecumenical group to also look at the needs for helping with foster care children. We're working with the juvenile department. Janice Ash will talk about that a little bit more. And then we have also convened a group looking at basic needs in our community and trying to figure out ways that we can work together to address some of those needs that are very critical. Secondly, I wanted to talk a little bit about the great success we had even before our planning was over with the process, and not to say that we're completed, because it is an ongoing process, but we were able to gain the cooperation and involvement of all 7 school districts in our county, plus the Educational School District Superintendent's Office. You notice I didn't say ESD. And we were very proud of this. This has not happened in the past. And we felt that this was a major accomplishment, was getting everyone at the table. As a result of this, one of the highest priority strategies that we identified was the use of community learning centers. This was highlighted in a bill that was passed in the last session, HB 2082, which did not have accompanying funds, but had a lot of support in terms of recognizing the fact that we need to have services located in the communities where people can access them. And so we have been attempting to have family resource centers located in school buildings where people can easily access the services. We would like to have before and after school programs and activities that are not just babysitting, but where the people who are delivering the services have coordinated efforts with the school so that they can identify when a child is having problems maybe at home and that's impacting how their schoolwork is going, and then try to bring all the services and needs
together to address those problems and help every child succeed. Another success we have had is in working with a demonstration project of the First Steps program, which was developed by Hill Walker's group at the Oregon Social Learning Center at the University of Oregon. And this was implemented with a small amount of money, $35,000, on a demonstration basis. This program addresses bullying and works with children to help them have more positive interactions. Because of the success of that program, we were able to leverage that into a $1.4 million federal grant from the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration branch of the National Institute of Health. This is the kind of investment of dollars on the local level which really pays off. And then finally, we want to emphasize that our community, our commission, myself, we all believe that no other agency in the state is focused on prevention. And this is where we come in. This is where we can be effective, where we can catch these problems early so they do not escalate into having children have to be at Oregon Youth Authority or having further mental health problems. And so we want to focus on that prevention. I think that some of the other points that I make in here about the cooperative effort we have with the State Commission I think are very pertinent, and you may want to take a look at those. We appreciate greatly the fact that we work in a cooperative effort with the agencies on the state level. And with that, I want to thank you for your ongoing support and ask you to continue to assure that each community has funding to address the locally identified needs and to do the work of building community. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Oh, one other thing I forgot to mention, and that is you've each been given a bookmark here for the Washington County Reads program. We have worked with our county libraries through our Take the Time initiative, which is an expansion in Washington County of the Multnomah County effort on Take the Time. And we're having everybody in Washington County who can read Pay It Forward. And we're inviting the author to come and speak, Catherine Ryan Hyde, and show her the movie and get everybody involved in reading and the philosophy of paying it forward. Thank you.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name again is Janice Ash, and I work in Washington County's Juvenile Department. My job there is to coordinate the juvenile crime prevention programs and also as a founding member of the Diversity Consortium, which is a group that's been included in a lot of the local planning efforts through the Commission on Children and Families. I really will try to be brief. I know you've been here for a long time. So I wanted to, as a person who has recently removed from the direct service arena, I can really relate to questions about how do planning efforts actually hit the pavement. And I have to admit that when I get invited to plan with a group of folks in the community, I wonder what it's actually going to do for kids and families. So I just want to speak specifically to that and then also address outcomes very briefly and finish. One of the things that one of the ladies from Grant County mentioned, I think really eloquently, is the need to leverage funds. And when we're out there looking for dollars for youth and family programs in our community, we have to be able to talk about the current status of the community in terms of what are the needs of kids and families. And we have to be able to talk about that from a fairly sophisticated perspective at this point. In addition, we are asked repeatedly to talk about what we have done to collaborate with other community partners. And I believe in the past we have not been able to do that as well. At this time, we're able to speak directly to relationships that we have with school and community entities, with agency providers, with juvenile departments, with law enforcement, with the judiciary, and also with ethnic organizations and other advocacy groups. I have specifically incorporated those pieces of information, those relationships, in grants that I've written for our county that have brought funding into our county for programs for kids in particular, since that's who I deal with, but also that indirectly benefit families. One of those programs that's in operation now reflects the strategies of the Comprehensive Community Plan, in terms of mentorship and school retention and working with very high-risk and marginalized youth in the school setting. And that is a project called the Youth Leadership Project, and it's currently located at Westview High School. And I believe it was mentioned at the Governor's Summit on overrepresentation of minority youth in the juvenile justice system. So that's a very promising new program. It has a great deal of accountability for outcomes. It uses the Oregon Juvenile Crime Prevention Risk Screen and Assessment tool as a way to track how youth are doing in that program in areas of risk. And it also looks at how youth are doing on concrete attendance measures and credit recovery. So it's a what I would consider a model program in terms of being accountable for outcomes, but really having a very meaningful impact in the lives of youth in that school. So moving on to outcomes, one of the things that I am hearing very clearly from the members of the committee is some question about how are we looking at how this planning process actually affects our community and whether or not it's actually making a difference to kids and families. And one of the things that we are implementing in Washington County, and I believe other counties are in the same process, is looking at logic models that address what are the standards for measuring outcomes in our community and what are the things that we already have in place that are fairly meaningful that look at how kids and families are doing that we can collaboratively look at together. There are tools in place now that are well-researched and well-documented. Someone mentioned the Blueprints programs, and that's a good place to look at model programs that have been well-researched with a scientific method and have lots of documentation connected. So some of those practices have been brought to our county, and we are using amongst each other and beginning to build some agreements about the standards that we hold county providers to in terms of looking at outcomes. So those are two very kind of concrete, specific ways that I can talk about the impact that the planning process has had in Washington County. And I'm happy to answer any questions and appreciate your patience.
No, I'm just saving your eyes.
Good idea. Thank you for coming in and sharing with us. And I know it's been long for you, too, today. And the members who left didn't leave because of testimony. They left because what happens is normally we're through at 3 and they have other committees that they must attend to. So most of them were running to another committee or had some meetings in their office. And I just wanted to offer that explanation so that you didn't think that it had anything to do with you. And these proceedings are taped so that they're able to come and review them or have their staff review them, and that's why it's important that you give your name and where you're from. So, but I do want to thank you for your patience, and we will, members, continue with the Commission on Children and Families, and the one item remaining on the agenda, which was from Marion County, because they are so close, and it's my county, they will begin tomorrow, so that we will not we will be able to hear from them. Anything else, Mrs. Baker?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the hearing tomorrow will start at 1:30 instead of 1, so just so your staff is aware of that. I think they've been called, but just in case. And then tomorrow after we finish up on this information meeting, we will go into start the commission's budget hearings on their budget bill. So,
Madam Chair?
Senator Gordon.
This is wonderful. I love it.
Again, thank you. And with that, we are adjourned.